Prabhupate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 6th canto, chapter 17, entitled Mother Parvati Curses Chitraketu, and this is text 29. Dehina Deha Samyogat Dvanvani Isharalilaya Shukam Bhukam Mritihi Janma Shapaha Anugraha Eva Cha Dehinam Dehasam Yoga Dhanvani Shalalilaya Dhanvani Shalalilaya Shukam Dukam Mritir Janma Shapanugraha evacha Dehinam deha samyoga Dvandva nishara lilaya Shukam dukam ritir janma Shapanugraha evacha Dehinam deha samyoga Dvanvani sharalilaya Shukam dukam ritir janma Shapanugraha evacha. Word meanings. Dehinam. Of all those who have accepted material bodies, deha samyogat, because of contact with the material body, dvanvani, dualities, isharalilaya, by the supreme will of the Lord. Shukam, happiness. Dukam, distress. Mritihi, death. Janma, birth. Shapaha, curse. Anugraha, favor. Eva, certainly. Cha, and. Translation. Because of the actions of the Supreme Lord's external energy, the living entities are conditioned in contact with material bodies. The dualities of happiness and distress, birth and death, curses and favors are natural byproducts of this contact in the material world. Why don't we repeat that? Because of the actions of the Supreme Lord's external energy, the living entities are conditioned in contact with material bodies. The dualities of happiness and distress, birth and death, curses and favors are natural byproducts of this contact in the material world. That means if you identify with your body, it's natural. Sometimes you're going to be happy and sometimes distressed. You're going to be happy when you're blessed. You're going to be unhappy when you're cursed. You may be happy when you're born, not happy when you die, or maybe vice versa, or whatever. But this verse is saying, by the will, Krishna's will, Ishvara Lilaya, by his Lila, he created the world in this way. For there to be duality. So everyone is thrown into this constant state of flux, going up and down, left and right, all the time. Everyone who is not Krishna conscious, or is not somewhat transcendental, as we all have experienced, right? All it takes is one person to say something to you unkind, and it'll ruin your day, or maybe your life, or maybe many lives. Let's read the purport. In Bhagavad Gita we find Maya Dakshena Pakiti Suyate Sa Chara Charam. The material world works under the direction of the goddess Durga, the material energy of the Lord. But she acts under the direction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In Brahma Samhita 5.44, it is said, Shishti Stiti Palaya Sadhana Shakti Eka Chayeva Yasya Bhuvanani Bibharti Durga. Durga, the goddess Parvati, the wife of Lord Shiva, is extremely powerful. She can create, maintain, and annihilate any number of universes by her sweet will. But she acts under the direction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, not independently. So this is referring to, in the verse, it is saying that the world is working under this dual nature by the will of Krishna, and that Durga is working under Krishna's will to do all that creation work. Just like I like to ask people, if you are God, which means you could do anything, everything is under your control, would you have a 9-to-5 job? Or would you get someone else to do it? Well, you wouldn't first need a job if you were God. But because you're God, you have still a job. You have to create, maintain, and annihilate. So would you do that yourself? The answer, natural answer would be, well, if I liked the work, I would do it. And if I didn't like the work, I would get someone else to do it. Right? I mean, if you were God, would you do something you didn't like? You don't have to. Right? So you'd get someone, you'd hire an accountant, you'd hire this and that. Unless you like accounting, you do it yourself. Some business people do it because they like it. But if you don't like it, you hire somebody. So, Krishna's God, so he hires people so he can stay here in Braj and play. He hires people to do all the other work, which is exactly what every wealthy person does. Right? They play on the golf course and their business goes on. Right? Isn't it? So that's what's being described here. This is how he does it, through the agency of his material energy. And then it's created by Durga, and then everyone's just more or less bewildered by it, getting pushed around, up and down. As the hours change in the day, some of us get happier, sadder, this, that, and the next thing. Right? There's a story I heard. It's quite funny. This devotee, he was a grihastha, and he was having a lot of financial trouble, and he was very, very stressed out, extremely stressed. And he was out on traveling Sangirtan, raising money somehow, or with the cost of living, however much money he raised, the next day it was gone. And he was always raising money and getting spent. So his wife wanted to pacify him because he was in so much distress. It was like his health was suffering because of the distress over money. So she made up a story. She said, I bought a lottery ticket and we just won $1 million. Which was not true, right? But with that one sentence, we just won $1 million, he completely changed his state of consciousness. Of course, when he came home, again his consciousness changed when he found out it was just a story. But the point is, just one sentence completely altered him, and then when he came back home, again depressed from one sentence. So that's the nature of how easily we can be disrupted. Isn't it? Yeah. not a very nice position to be in, I don't think. Krishna is impartial, but because this is the material world of duality, such relative terms as happiness and distress, curses and favors, are created by the will of the Supreme. Why? Well, we all know that Krishna has given us a little bit of independence. And with that little bit of independence, we kind of made a mess of it. And we kind of, if we're not smart, we continue to make a mess of it, isn't it? Now, naturally, people think, Krishna, why did you give me this free will? Because I misuse it and I suffer. There was one devotee asked Prabhupada, he said, Srila Prabhupada, why did you make women so beautiful? It's like not fair. I'm trying to get out of the material world. You know, not you. Why did you? Why did Krishna make women so beautiful? He said, that doesn't seem fair. If he really wants us out of the material world, why didn't he just make the material world unattractive? And Prabhupada said, no, he made it attractive because you wanted to enjoy it. If all the women were ugly, then you'd say, Prabhupada, why did Krishna make all the women ugly? I want to enjoy a nice wife and I can't. Isn't it? Yeah, so, you know, you're going to complain about something. Yes? So, a nice example is given to illustrate why Krishna gave us independence. He gave us independence ultimately to enjoy rasa with him. That's why we have independence, right? But we say, oh Krishna, why did you give me independence? Because I suffer. So the nice analogy is given that the tongue can taste something bitter and it could taste something sweet. And because it can taste something sweet means it could taste something bitter. Yes? So do you complain, oh tongue, why do you allow me to taste something bitter? I just want to taste nice things. No, but because it has taste, so you can taste something sweet, you can also taste something bitter. Now, if you eat something bitter, that's your fault. So, Krishna has given us independence so we can taste rasa. Because by free will, we can love him. And therefore, there's rasa. But that independence can be misused, and you can eat something bitter, and then you can complain, why did I eat something bitter? But it's our fault. And then you eat something bitter, and then you get stuck within all these dualities. Those who are not Narayana Para, pure devotees, must be disturbed by this duality of the material world. Whereas devotees who are simply attached to the service of the Lord are not at all disturbed by it. For example, Haridas Thakur was beaten with cane in 22 bazaars, but he was never disturbed. Instead, he smilingly tolerated the beating. Despite the disturbing dualities of the material world, devotees are not disturbed at all. Isn't that interesting? When you read these statements about how devotees are, and then you look at yourself and you ask the question, am I actually a devotee? Am I even a reflection of a devotee? I get disturbed so easily. And here Prabhupada's saying, devotees aren't disturbed at all. But and what's Prabhupada referring to? Chitraketu was not disturbed. And he didn't do anything wrong. And he was cursed. I mean, you know, if you do something wrong and you're cursed, maybe you can tolerate it. He didn't do anything wrong. And nobody objected, not even Lord Shiva, because everybody knew he didn't do anything wrong. If I'm walking around Krishna Balaram dear, kissing my wife and embracing her, and somebody comes up and says, Prabhu, I think, you know, you better do this at home. It's not proper. Did they say anything wrong? He said, you know, you're a Prabhupada disciple. Actually, you have your own disciples. This isn't really a good example. I'm just in your own best interest, I think people will criticize you, and you're going to have a lot of trouble, and your disciples are going to get bewildered. Maybe you should just keep this in private. Is there anything wrong with saying that? No, they're saying that because they want to help me. And that's what Chitraketu did. He just was trying to help Lord Shiva. He didn't say anything wrong, and Parvati thought he said something wrong. Nobody complained except her. Of course, it was Leela. So Krishna wanted to liberate Chitraketu, so he did this Leela. But Chitraketu knew he didn't do anything wrong, and still he accepted the curse. Why? It's very interesting. At least my experience in my own life and dealing with devotees, we get very easily upset about stupid things. Have you noticed that? I do some marriage counseling, some workshops on marriage, and it's common that married couples say, we're always fighting. And my question is, are you fighting about anything important? And the answer is always, no. And Prabhupada gave that example, right? You know, when a couple fights, you know, it's like lightning without thunder, or what's it like, goats what? Making noise? It's like inconsequential. Nothing's going to happen. So we're getting so upset about nothing. That's very common, right? And Chitraketu Maharaj, he's not even upset. He maybe has even a right to be upset. Let me just finish reading. Instead, he smilingly tolerated the beating. This is about Haridas Thakur. Despite the disturbing dualities of the material world, devotees are not disturbed at all. Not disturbed at all. Right? We're not disturbed at all, right? No, devotees are not disturbed. We're trying to be devotees. Because they fix their minds on the lotus feet of the Lord and concentrate on the holy name of the Lord, they do not feel the so-called pains and pleasures caused by the dualities of this material world. So, as you know, in Nectar of Instruction, we're taught to be utsahan, enthusiastic, nishtaya dharyat, patient, faithful, tolerant. Everywhere in our scriptures, we're taught these things. Second chapter, Bhagavad Gita. It's all about what's going on in this story. Samadukam sukam dhiram somritadvaya kapate. Sama, samatam, just be balanced, just be equal. In what? Sukam. Happiness. Why should I be equal in happiness? I should enjoy happiness. No. If you try to enjoy happiness, you forget Krishna. And if you're not equal in dukkham, you forget Krishna. Anu dukeshu anu vigdamana sukeshu vigata spriha vitaraga vayo krodha stitidhir muni uchate. When you're not disturbed by dukkha, distress and happiness, you become stitadir, steady. And then what happens? Somritatvaya kalpate. Now you're in a position where you can become liberated. Why? Because if we're disturbed by every little thing that happens, we forget Krishna. We were once in Mayapur, we were doing a workshop. And so we had a little exercise in the workshop. This was a workshop on forgiveness. About the cost. What does it cost you if you hold on to revenge? So one devotee raised his hand. Said, it cost me my japa. I said, what does that mean? He said, because when I am Sri Sri Krishna Balaram ki jai, Sri Sri Gaunitai ki jai, Sri Sri Radhe Sham Lalita Vishaka ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. What time does class end? 9. Yeah, okay. You're not doing anything after 9 anyway, right? Except eating, so... Yeah, no problem, right? I'm not famous for ending on time, in case you're hungry. I won't feel offended if you leave. So, what's the cost of holding on to resentment? He said, it cost me my japa. I said, why? He said, because when I feel this resentment towards this devotee, when I chant my rounds, I don't think of Krishna, I think of how much I hate him. Raise your hand if you have that experience. Yeah, it's pretty universal. Something happens, you're upset about something. It may be a devotee, whatever. Somebody didn't save you, prasadam, you're hungry, you're upset about something, and that could enter your japa. Yes? Now, I have an experience. I'll just be honest here. That this has happened to me also, but something else happened. That I was meditating during my japa on how wrong this devotee was. What he did was wrong. What he did hurt me. It upset me because it was wrong. And with each round of japa, I had a realization. It was how wrong he actually was. So by the end of 16 rounds, he was 16 times wronger than when I started. Anyone have this experience? Yes. Isn't that amazing? And it shows what this verse is showing, that if we allow ourselves to be distracted by happiness or distress, it ruins our bhajan. It causes us to forget Krishna. And in fact, the bhajan then empowers the distress somehow or other. That we become more, the more we think we are Krishna conscious, the more we become distressed. Though sometimes we see this amazing phenomena going on that as we become more Krishna conscious, bad qualities sometimes increase. You know, the pride increases. And if pride increases, then envy increases. Well, why am I proud? Well, I've been a devotee a long time, so I'm proud. And that means I'm better than you. Very interesting phenomena. I don't want to talk about it much, but it does happen. Which Prabhupada sometimes describes as devotional service in the mode of anger. It's there in the Bhagavatam. Anger is a product of, it came out of Brahma, it's blue and red, passion and ignorance. That's what anger is. It's a combination of passion and ignorance. So when a devotee is angry, why is he angry? Prabhupada said, because he thinks he's better than everybody. That's one of the reasons you get angry. Well, you're useless. What do you know? You get angry with people. So he becomes angry. How can you think of Krishna in this mood of anger? So, in the second chapter, if you go over the second chapter, it's very interesting because, as I was saying, in Nectar of Instruction, it talks about how to develop qualities of pure devotees before you have the qualities. So, why does anyone have to tell you to be enthusiastic if you're a pure devotee? Do you have to tell pure devotees to be enthusiastic? No. Pure devotee, at least, is on the stage of ruchi. If someone has ruchi, how is ruchi described? Ruchi is described by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur as you always want to chant, you always want to talk about Krishna, you always want to serve, you have a taste. Nobody can stop you. You drive your wife crazy because all you want to do is talk about Krishna. Say, can't you talk about saris and jewelry for a minute? No. I can talk about Radharani's sari and her jewelry, but I can't. Can't you talk about anything else? No. That's the state of ruchi. You're not attracted. Oh, why don't you come with me to watch a movie? No, I want to read Bhagavatam. No, but we never have any fun together. Don't marry a man in the stage of ruchi if you want to have fun, because he's no fun. All he wants to do is chant. You know, women, they're always attracted to these advanced devotees, but when they get married, they go, oh my God, he's so advanced, he doesn't want to do anything else. So, that's the stage of ruchi. So you're actually attracted to Krishna, you just really are not interested in anything else. So, it's not to that devotee that you're saying, utsaha nishtaya dharyat. You have to say, slow it down, Prabhu, you know, take a little time with your wife, and you know, be nice to the devotees, don't ignore them. You have to slow them down, you don't have to speed them up. So, the utsahan, the samadukam sukam dhiram, that's for practicing devotees. So you have either you're tolerant or you're practicing tolerance. And if you're not on this level that's described here as chitta ketru, that means you're practicing it. That means you don't have it, but you practice it. So Krishna is telling Arjuna, practice it. Right? There's so many verses. Fight. Don't worry if you win or lose. Just be dharmic. Do it out of duty. So what is Krishna saying? It's very interesting if you analyze it from a little bit from a psychological perspective. Krishna is saying, there's either dharma or there's how you feel. What are you going to do? Well, Arjuna's saying, you know, Krishna, I don't really feel like fighting. And like any good temple president, Krishna says, who cares how you feel? Any president ever told you that? Or maybe that was a typical 1970s. Says, you know, I don't really feel like I can do this service. Who cares how you feel? Just do it. But I'm not recommending that. We should care. But basically, Krishna is telling Arjuna, I know you don't feel like it, but it's your dharma. So you have two choices, Arjuna. You're either going to do what you feel like, or you're going to do your dharma. And if you do what you feel like, everybody's going to laugh at you. Because here's this big kshatriya doing what he feels like. And he feels like being a Brahmin. And he doesn't feel like fighting. And he's all compassionate and forgiving. No, that's for Brahmins. It's not for kshatriyas. And Prabhupada said he had to speak to Arjuna to get him angry because he wasn't angry. There's got to be a little fire there, you know? Kshatriya spirit. So, in our lives, we're dealing with the same situation. 4 a.m. The alarm goes off. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. You know, that's the time when the Maha Mantra doesn't sound so good, right? Sounds better later in the day. You know? And then it's like, okay, I don't feel like getting up. And this little voice says, it doesn't matter how you feel. It matters what's right. You have to do what's right. There's this story. It's kind of heavy, but Prabhupada was not light. Guru means heavy. Devotees went out on a program late at night. They got back like 12 or 1. And then it's time for Mangal Arati. And they're sleeping. And Prabhupada has to go wake them up. Why are you sleeping? Prabhupada, we were up late. The program, 12, 1 o'clock, whatever it was. It was quite late. And Prabhupada said, no, you have to get up for Mangal Arati. You can sleep later, but you have to get up. So obviously nobody felt like getting up four or five hours later, 3 hours later, right? So when you're not liberated, when we're not liberated, then the instruction is tolerate. Tolerate what? Happiness. Oh my God, Prabhu, I'm having a really bad day. Why? I had to tolerate so much. What were you tolerating? Oh, so many devotees were giving me prasadam and giving me hugs, and I got a call from my uncle that he just gave me $10,000, and my sister just bought me a new watch, and I left it's such a horrible day. Why? I have to tolerate all of this. And it's true. We have to tolerate those things, because if we don't, what will happen? We'll start to think, actually, I'm happy in the material world. And if you're happy in the material world because you're Krishna conscious, that's perfect. But if you're happy in the material world because you just got a new Rolex watch, $10,000, everybody's feeding you up to the neck, etc., that becomes a diversion because you forget Krishna. You agree? Happiness, you know. It's like, you know, Krishna's... Okay, I'll tell you a story. It's a funny story. You like funny stories? I have to keep you awake. So, you probably have the same experience, but I will tell you. I was raised in Los Angeles, California, by the ocean. If you are raised by the ocean in Los Angeles, California, there's a good chance you become addicted to surfing, which happened to me. Very addicted. As you know, addictions, you can't easily give them up. So, I was addicted. So now I have to tell you a little bit about surfing so you understand. It's an addiction, and when you're addicted, you always think about the addiction and when you're going to do it next. So surfers or skiers or whatever you're addicted to, you always think about doing it when you're not doing it, and after you do it and finish it, usually you come out of the water because either you're too cold or you're too exhausted, otherwise you keep doing it, and then you just think about tomorrow when you're going to do it again. Right? So that was me. Right? So, every surfer has a dream to go to some paradise island where the waves are perfect. There are such things as perfect waves, actually. And there are very few people, and the weather's perfect, and you can live under coconut trees and drink coconuts and eat bananas and papayas and mangoes and take a few thousand dollars with you and live there for a few years and just surf every day and be a beach bum. That's their dream. Do we have any surfers here to confirm that? Yes, we have. He's confirmed. It's confirmed, right? So, I started surfing when I was a little boy, and then I became devotee, and then I realized that kirtan was better than surfing. That was why I gave up surfing. I gave up surfing for kirtan. Yeah, I think it was a good decision. But anyway, as you know, the example of Bhagavatam gives, if there's alcohol in a container and you pour out the alcohol and you wash the container, it still smells because it gets absorbed by the wood. So as every great surfer who became a devotee knows, even though kirtan is better than surfing, the desire to surf remains, even if you're going to do it or not. But as we are practicing tolerance, we tolerate that desire. And we go to the beach and we look at the good waves and we go, I'm finished. Although we are imagining we're riding those waves. But if you understand what I mean, we tolerate it, right? So 1982, I ended up in this island that was described in a surfing magazine that has the ultimate best waves in the universe. And the waves were so good, they wouldn't even tell people the name of the island because they didn't want to ruin it for the surfers that knew it. So they gave it a different name. And Sunderlal, you may not know that, but that island was your home country of Mauritius, featured in the Surfer magazine in the 1960s. And they called it the Island of Santosh because they didn't want anybody to find it. And I ended up on that island. So naturally, as a bona fide surfer, who's got surfer samskaras deeply ingrained in the heart, who is still very tolerant, who only thinks about it, using my surfer intelligence, there's one white Mauritian devotee in the whole country. So I think he's got to know about surfing because the Indians, they can't hardly swim. What to speak of surf, right? And when I went to Mauritius, they build their houses in the city, not on the beach. I'm like, why don't you build a house on the beach? No, beach isn't nice. I said, you should build a house. Now everybody builds houses on the beaches. They should have listened to me. They would have been rich. They would have built their house then. Anyway, so I think I'll ask the only Mauritian, raised a Mauritian, white person. He must be a surfer. I said, Arjuna, are you a surfer? He said, yeah. I said, where are the waves? He said, this beach. I said, can I go? He takes me there, right? So it was the season, August is the season, this storm season. So he takes me to the beach, and there I was. This was 12 years after I'd become a devotee, 20 years after the first wave I've ever rode in my life. I'm on the beach looking at what are perfect waves, like perfect. I don't know. I can't explain if you're not a surfer. But perfect wave means a high level of sense gratification. Like off the charts sense gratification. So I'm looking at these waves. I don't know, you have to translate it into what's like perfect for you. I'm looking at these waves. I'm sitting on the island that I dreamed about. Rainbows, mountains, crystal clear water, like six people surfing. If this were California, there'd be 6,000 people in that water. And you would get one wave in about 8 hours and get yelled at a million times and run over a million times to get that one wave. But you would do it. And here I am in paradise. And I was complaining to Krishna. I said, Krishna, you're 12 years too late. Now I don't really want to do this anymore. So isn't it like that? That Krishna, you want so many things. And Krishna goes, I've noted what you want. And that day, when that day comes that you don't want it, then maybe I'll give it to you because I want to please you. But if I give it to you when you want it, what happens? You won't know how to tolerate the happiness. And therefore, what happens? You'll forget Krishna. One of my godbrothers told me, very nice story. One devotee was praying to Prabhupada. He said, I want mercy. Prabhupada said, you're not qualified for it. He said, you can't handle it. He said, what do you mean? Have you ever heard that? You pray to your guru and said, give me mercy. And you go, no way. You're not qualified. If I give you mercy, you'll fall into Maya. Basically, that was what Prabhupada was saying. You're not. He said, I want Krishna's mercy. I want all this mercy. He said, no. You can't handle it. What did he mean? So he explained, if you get Krishna's mercy, then you will develop amazing qualities. The mercy will shine through you and people will honor you and glorify you and surrender to you and give you things. And you won't be able to handle it. You'll fall into Maya. So he said, you're not ready yet for mercy. Isn't that interesting? Why Krishna's not giving me mercy? Are you ready for it? You know, we're all praying to Krishna for mercy. How much are you ready for? He gives you too much and then goes to your mind. Then you become proud. One of our great presidents, I don't know if you know this, but America used to have great presidents. Did you know that? Like 100 years ago, 150, they actually had presidents who could speak English and could make sense and were sense controlled. Did you know that? They actually did. And they had one called Abraham Lincoln. And he said something very interesting. He said, if you want to test a man, he's not tested by distress. He said, because everybody in distress, somehow you have to tolerate it. If you don't tolerate it, you can't exist, isn't it? Isn't that our experience? You go through distress, something happens, your wife or husband leaves you, you lose your money, you get in an accident. You have to tolerate it. You don't have a choice. If you don't tolerate it, you just become a vegetable and just stop functioning. But he said, if you want to test a man's character, it's not by distress. He said, give him honor and see if he can tolerate that. That is a real test. Isn't that interesting? I really like that. Honor that person. Give him, put him on a pedestal and see how he responds to that. So when Krishna says you have to be sama in sukha, that's more difficult than sama in dukkha, in distress. Sama in sukha means happiness, isn't it? So, in this story, Chittaketu Maharaj, he's our hero. Why is he our hero? I do a lot of counseling. I've done many, many workshops to help devotees deal with one problem, which is reacting to what's going on in the material world in a negative way, instead of reacting in a positive way. Like, we give an example. When you squeeze an orange, what comes out of the orange is orange juice, because that's what's inside. And so when we're squeezed, what comes out of us? What's inside of us, right? But we always blame the person who's squeezing. I hate you. You make me angry. No, he doesn't make you angry. He squeezes your anger, right? Now, we have this example here, Thakur Haridas. If anyone had a reason to be angry, it's a person who's being caned to death. Yes? I mean, would you be upset at the people trying to kill you? When we came to Vrindavan, first in 1975, passionate young men who would collect hundreds of dollars every day on Sankirtan, and a poor, ragged rickshaw wala wanted to do the exact thing that we were doing to everybody, which was extract more money than they wanted to give. But now they were doing it to us. It was like, you know, and our karma hit us with the rickshaw wallas, you know. They were telling us it was 10 rupees when it was only 8. And so 2 rupees in those days was like, I don't know, 15 cents or something. And we would get very upset. You're cheating us. And we would have big, big fights. You remember anyone here from those days? You know, you could hear the fights in the temple. Oh, there's a devotee fighting with a rickshaw wallah over 15 cents. Like, that didn't really matter much to him. So we would get very easily upset. And it's my experience as a counselor, devotees get very easily upset about things. And these upsets become big issues, and then devotees stop talking to one another. Sometimes they become resentments. They just, that's it for life. They don't want to deal with a devotee. And I've done workshops where people are coming with issues that they had in 1975 with their temple president, and now it's 2015, and they're still upset. Is that amazing? And Chita Ketu Maharaj, he has every reason to be upset. And we generally don't have big reasons. Sometimes we do, but generally the reasons aren't that big. He's our hero. He's setting the example for us. Isn't it? You agree? This is such a good example. We need heroes. Jayananda Prabhu, he's my hero. How many of you know about Jayananda Prabhu? Why Jayananda Prabhu is my hero is because when somebody, as we say in America, ruffles our feathers. Do you have that? You understand? Ruffle your feathers? Could you imagine what that means? Ruffle your feathers? Somebody does something to disturb you or upset you. Yes, that's called ruffle your feathers. It's so nice to preach in America because I don't have to explain everything. And I'm rarely preaching in America. Everywhere I go, I have to explain everything. I say things and everybody's like, huh? Ruffle your feathers? So, we get our feathers ruffled very easily. So when my feathers get ruffled, somebody says, yeah, you think you're big this, but I know you're that. And I'm like, who are you to talk to me like that? And I get upset. I think of Jayananda. Because Jayananda Prabhu was the personification of humility. And I ask myself the question, okay, this devotee is saying something that's upsetting me. What would Jayananda Prabhu do in this situation? I know what he would do. He would say nothing. He would just say, thank you, Prabhu. That's what he would do. So Jayananda Prabhu is my hero, and when I think of him, it saves me from saying or ever saying or doing the wrong thing. Chita Ketu Maharaj is our hero. Nobody's going to curse you to take body of a demon, I don't think. But even if they did, you think of Chita Ketu, and you think, what would Chita Ketu Maharaj do in this situation? Chita Ketu Maharaj did not do anything wrong, and he asked for forgiveness of Parvati, and he accepted it. He accepted the curse. Yes? Interesting thing, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said something so amazing. He said, the way you become a Mahabhagavat is you go evolve in your devotional service where you become Samadukha, Sukham Dhiram. When you come to this point, then you're Mahabhagavat. That's a sign of Mahabhagavat. He's not disturbed anymore. So, Krishna is telling us to get to this Samadukha, you have to practice Samadukha. So before you have it, you have to practice it. So the path to tolerance is paved with the practice of it. That's just how it works. If you say, I'm not tolerant, that's okay, but you have to practice it. If you don't practice it before you have it, you're not going to get it. That's the whole process. Practice it. Tolerance is paved with the practice of it. Transcending duality is paved with the practice. That's the whole idea. So either you have it or you practice it. Either you do your dharma or you do what you feel like. And if you do what you feel like, more often when someone upsets you, you feel like getting back at them. Right? I could go on forever, but I'll end with one very interesting realization and thought. Well, let me say one thing before this. Prabhupada said in a purport, he said, the science of living peacefully and dealing with the material world is to be happy. And he said, the secret of dealing with the material world is not to be disturbed by happiness and distress, to tolerate it. He said, then you're jivan mukti. Then you're liberated. So before we are liberated, so like Chitta Ketu, if we practice it, then we become liberated. I'm not going to allow myself to become disturbed. Even though these things are disturbing, I'm not going to allow myself to become disturbed. That's it. That's everything. That's the second chapter. Now I just forgot what I was going to say. Story, yeah. But I have to remember the story. That's the problem. Story, did I say what the story was going to be about? No. Prabhupada. My realization. Oh yes, my realization, yeah. There is apparently a medicine that puts the wires back together in your head, and I just got it delivered yesterday, so I'm anxious to take it. So, this is my realization. After teaching forgiveness courses for many, many years, and I think it's an important realization for us. It's not something I read in a book. It's something I saw in a workshop. And a lot of devotees were caught in thinking or feeling that I can't forgive this person. I just can't. And I said, why? Because they don't deserve it. Because what they did is so bad, it would be wrong to forgive them. Because what they did is so bad, I'm so hurt, I can't forgive them. And I was realizing that what's happening is, well, there's a story. A devotee went to Bhakti Vidya Purnaswami, and she had a forgiveness issue. She said, Maharaj, how do I forgive? And he gave such a simple answer. He said, you should forgive because it pleases Krishna. It's like, oh, I never thought of that. Isn't that interesting? But if we forgive, it'll please Krishna. In fact, Krishna says, for he for whom no one is put into difficulty, who is not distressed by anyone, who is equal in happiness and distress, fear and anxiety, I'm very dear to him. So we become dear to Krishna when we don't put others in anxiety. Just like Brihat Bhagavat Maharaj, he always teaches, if someone offends you, don't get offended because that's not good for them. Because when you get offended, then it becomes an offense. And then they suffer. That's a very nice teaching, right? So, don't react, because when you react, then you put them in distress. So what Krishna is teaching is such a nice thing. He's teaching that if I put another person in distress, then I'm not dear to Krishna. If I don't put you in distress, then I can become dear to Krishna. So how I treat you affects my relationship with Krishna. It goes this way, horizontally, then it goes vertically. Right? I can't just go to Krishna. It's affected by how I treat you. And most of the what we call virtues, if you think of what virtues are, in this, and where we're talking here, to be equal poised and act in good qualities, think about the virtues. What are they? They're kindness, compassion, tolerance, forgiveness. They're all, most of the virtues are in relation to other people, isn't it? How you deal with other people. So if you deal with other people in a way that doesn't put them in distress, you become dear to Krishna. So devotees are saying, I just don't know how to forgive. And they're thinking with their head, why should I forgive him? He's a bad person. Why should I forgive him? He'll do it again. It's all thinking in the head, but not thinking, I shouldn't put anyone in distress. That's a devotee. And that will please Krishna. So, become equipoised because it'll please Krishna. Krishna says, if you're equipoised, you're dear to me. I can become dear to Krishna just by not becoming upset when somebody steals a sweet ball off my plate. Or somebody says something nasty to me. Or somebody doesn't show up when they said they're supposed to show up. I can become dear to Krishna. Isn't that amazing? Just by being equal. Krishna is pleased. Because we're dealing nicely with other devotees. We're not putting them into difficulty. So I'll end here. And if you have any questions or comments, then we can take them. Yes, yes. Maharaj. You want a microphone? Wait for a microphone.
Thank you, Mahaprabhu.
Hare Krishna.
For a lot of lessons, especially about 5 minutes. The other day, Vaishnava Prabhu was giving class, and a good friend of mine was young enough to be my grandson. He made a statement, and this is not what my question is. I didn't completely agree with his statement, but he said you can't fake tolerance.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of relevant to what my question is, that if we're dealing one-to-one individually, then everything you're saying is inspiring and will help us to have a better sangha, in the big sangha this time. There's no question. But then there's a question of if, and sometimes it does happen, we can't deny it, that sometimes a person who has authority over even spiritual lives, I'm not talking about guru necessarily, but it could be a temple commander, a temple president, a regional secretary, I won't say any more. but if they are not quite with it, they themselves are not aware of how they're affecting others, and it goes on for maybe a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you might say that, well, we don't need justice in ISKCON. We don't need that to be corrected, because after all, we should be tolerant. But you're also pointing out that we're not devotees. We're just trying to be devotees. Not that that's an excuse for us not to struggle to become Christ-like in mm-hmm. Krishna consciousness. But at the same time, you can say for the rest of us, where we're trying to reach that standard that you were talking about, Krishna
yes.
discusses in chapter 12 of the Bhagavad Gita. So for our society to be a happier one, there was one devotee, Maharaj Achara Subhas Swami, he ended a class there in Vrindavan, and he said, never leave this gun, never leave this gun, never leave this gun, 3 times. And then, I'll make this quick. And then he said, any questions? Everyone was offering a basis. He says, no, wait. At that time, my name was Prabhupada. He says, and Prabhupada says one question. So instead of asking a question, I just repeated what he said. He said, never leave this gun. Never leave ISKCON. Never leave ISKCON. However, we should make ISKCON so nice that nobody would even be tempted to leave. So my question basically is, should we just assume that as an institution, we really don't have to worry about hurting people because, after all, they're devotees, they should be tolerant? Or is it rather that we should recognize that we're trying to be devotees, but not fully tolerate? Maybe my young friend had a point that you can't really fake it, or you can't fake it and go on faking it, being tolerant. And maybe there is some goal of some type, as we tried in previous decades, to have some type of a justice arrangement in ISKCON, where there's somebody you can appeal to if one feels that he's yeah. being abused.
Very good question. Can I answer it in a like a roundabout way? Because I think it's multifaceted. And so it triggered some thoughts. And you brought up one thing indirectly, and it doesn't directly answer your question, maybe indirectly, but I want to bring it up first. is sometimes we tolerate to our own, at our own expense, to our own demise. It's some things, like there's a joke, we will not tolerate intolerance. But there's a validity to it in the sense that sometimes we tolerate beyond our tolerance level and then we become even more disturbed. So we should not tolerate abuse, either being perpetrated on us or especially on another. Although as Vaishnavas we're taught, okay, let people abuse you, but don't let people abuse one another, another person. But Prabhupada taught the principle, do what's favorable and avoid what's unfavorable. So sometimes tolerance comes to a threshold where it becomes unfavorable, where we're tolerating something which is not good. And like you might say, our leader, he doesn't understand, I'm not capable of doing this service, it's actually having a bad effect. And we've seen this many times where devotees, even senior devotees, had fallen down because their leaders had pushed them in a direction that they knew wasn't healthy for them. And were told, just tolerate it and do it. And then they crashed. So the principle is do what's favorable. And my level of tolerance may be here, yours may be much higher, and my threshold is lower, and I'll crack at a lower place. So I can't allow myself to crack. There's something else that Prabhupada said. It was very interesting. Prabhupada was quoting Trinada Pi Sunichena, and he said, if a devotee is being attacked, he wasn't referring to a temple president attacking a devotee. He was referring to a non-devotee being physically attacked. He said, no more Trinada Pi. At that point, you attack, you defend. So it's another kind of humility. So redefining tolerance and humility according to situations. Naturally, I think inherent in your question is what we see that sometimes in our forgiveness courses, a devotee says, I don't have an issue because of myself, I have an issue with someone who mistreated someone else, and that hurts me more than he mistreated me, but it hurts me more than he mistreated someone else. And I think that follows in the line of you have to defend devotees and protect them. And you know, then it brings up this whole argument of, well, we shouldn't criticize. But that has not the definition of criticism, sadhu ninda, ninda means malice. So it means there's malice there. Criticism without malice, this is a whole different ballgame. You're defending, you're protecting a devotee. And I think that's necessary. You're also talking about sometimes leaders are not sensitive and they create problems. And can a devotee deal with that because he can't tolerate it, or should he tolerate it? Again, I think it goes back to the same thing. Tolerating it may be the better of two options or the worst of two options. Because sometimes it's the better of two options because he knows when he goes to the authorities, in this particular situation, it's not going to work, and it makes it worse, unfortunately. We're not a perfect society, so sometimes we learn to tolerate and let it go and try to find another situation where we'll be peaceful, you know, because there's nothing we can do. And I think a lot of times that's the reality of life. There's situations that are wrong. Just from the point of view of justice, it's wrong. It shouldn't be going on in our movement, but it is. And nobody can change it. And all you can do is readjust in your own consciousness and accept it, that this is... I don't have a choice now to not tolerate it because I can't do anything about it. And the problem I've seen is at that point when you don't tolerate it, that's when your Krishna consciousness becomes disturbed. And then you start becoming offensive. ISKCON this, ISKCON that. Prabhupada said, don't leave ISKCON. That's why we're here. I think many of us would not be here if he didn't say that. And we are dedicated to ISKCON while we're tolerating it. Isn't it? Aren't we all tolerating it? I mean, I'm just being totally honest. I travel a lot, and I see a lot of bad. The more you travel, the more you see. You see the good, and you see the bad. And I see a lot of bad things. And there's some times in my life when I actually have a difficult time staying in ISKCON because of the things I see, because I don't want to be part of a society where there's so much injustice, or people who are insensitive, or devotees who are hurt, or people who are getting bad advice. And it's hard for me. It's very, very difficult for me. And I think Prabhupada said, don't leave. And so how do I tolerate it? I try to do what I can to see my little part, if I can do something to prevent that from happening somewhere, or helping an individual devotee. And that's how I tolerate when I can't tolerate, by trying to do something. And I found personally that sometimes the greatest healing comes if you can personally do something to make a situation better. So let's say you find leadership, let's say in this example, may not be as sensitive as it should be in all cases, so you do your part to speak to leaders or give courses on leadership to teach to be more sensitive to devotees' needs and so forth. And then you feel somewhat reconciled in doing that, that you're at least you're contributing, and because you can't change the situation directly, and that's how you tolerate it. At least that's what I do. You want to add to that? The microphone disappeared? Yeah.
I want to thank everyone for giving me the opportunity to take a little more time. I don't want to impose. I liked everything in your answer, and it helped me and made sense. The only thing that I felt uncomfortable with was when you mentioned, well, there are just these situations and nobody can do anything about it. Then there's a term for trying to do something about it when it's an issue which is a sort of a public issue, or some is an institutional issue. The word is called reform. So it would seem like those who are concerned, not just about how I'm offended, but a number, maybe too large of a number, are offended in certain specific situations that go on 10 years, 20 years, 30 years. And maybe it's time to consider reevaluating that situation and considering some type of reform in the situation. So I just invite devotees who have the same concerns that I do, in a general sense, that let's help one another. I'm exactly what you said. I won't leave ISKCON because ISKCON is the only society that Prabhupada is the founder of Charya, and I'm sticking with Prabhupada. So, anyway, maybe after the class, I can.
No, I accept what you say, and I understand. I think the nature of reform has to be extremely compassionate. Otherwise, it becomes it's not Vaishnava culture, and so we have to be careful because most of us were raised not as Vaishnavas, and so when we go into reform, some other samskaras kind of take over, and we attack people. And one of the worst attacks I think we make is to attack people's motives. Sometimes people do things which we judge to be wrong, and maybe objectively they are wrong. But to attack a person's motives is, to me, hitting under the belt, and we do that sometimes in reform. So I guess what I was saying, the way I'm reformed, my reform is to try to do something without taking it to a greater level, but that's just my nature, and I don't think necessarily it's the best way. What you say may be broader and more effective, but what really I don't want to say disturbs me, because we just had a class on not being disturbed, but disturbs me in a good way, transcendental way, is when there's something wrong and the person's motives are questioned. He's doing this because he's proud. He's doing this because he wants to gain something. He's doing this to manipulate. And the person has dedicated almost 50 years of their life to serving Krishna, and they could have had much more materially if they weren't devotees. And to say those things, I think, is an extremely dysfunctional way to try to create reform. So I'm not accusing anybody of doing that, but I've seen it, and I think it's destructive. It's not Vaishnava-like. And I just think we have to be careful about it. But I appreciate your point. Hare Krishna Maharaj. Oh, we have a question. Wow. When some incident happens, yes.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for the wonderful class and very helpful.
Hare Krishna.
Ideas. And in regards to what Damodar Maharaj mentioned in terms of reforms, it's good, I think, for all the devotees to know that reforms are on the way, and there are many, many devotees who want to change things for better in a very careful and thoughtful way. And from the very top of our organization, there are a number of good initiatives to change things for better. And I think very soon devotees will learn about them. So there is a light at the end of the tunnel, and it's not the light of the coming train. It's real light.
Haribol. I was just with Giriraj Swami and Ritatmaja Swami in America a few months ago, and we were talking about these things, and Ritatmaja Maharaj said that what is typical is you get a group together and their capabilities reduce about 35% when they start working together than they would if they worked individually. Like you added up all their abilities, it would equal a certain number, and it's 35% less when you put them together because of when synergy lacks. So I think that's part of what's happening in ISKCON. Because my experience is that when I talk about these issues with devotees, even GBC men, everybody's clear. But what's happening on the ground is not always what we want to happen, that we understand should happen. So in taking what you said, I take it that way, that leadership is aware of a lot of these problems. It's just how to do it in a way within an organization, a group of people, that everyone is satisfied, and, you know, conservatives, liberals, this and that. And there are many wonderful things going on, for sure, and there's many. One of the things that has become so obvious to me in the last 5 or 10 years is there's so many advanced devotees in ISKCON. It's just amazing how advanced so many devotees have become. And if you have a society of devotees that advanced, it can't fail. You know, when you have that level of Krishna consciousness, even if you just have one person left with a high level of Krishna consciousness, it'll succeed, as we saw with Prabhupada. So that's what gives me hope. You know, that like devotees are actually becoming extremely, they're becoming attached to Krishna. They're going beyond nishta to ruchi and higher stages. And that's what spreads Krishna consciousness. That gives me a lot of hope. And now we have a question. When some incident happens with devotees, then my mind constantly thinks about this. How to stop this thinking process? My personal experience is that if somebody upsets you and creates a negative emotion, you become connected to that person. So it's like there's this imaginary rope that connects you with the hate and the anger. And you have to cut that rope. And if you don't cut that rope, that person controls you. And the cutting of the rope is forgiveness. And when you forgive, then it's amazing what happens. In 1986, I was in America, and our guru, Sannyasi, not my guru, but the guru, Sannyasi GBC, left. He didn't even tell us he was leaving. We read a letter a week or two later that he wrote to his disciples. None of the leaders that worked with him for 10 years were even told that he was leaving. I was very resentful. And the temple was ruined, and so many things were ruined. My life was ruined in many ways. I was very, very resentful. And I didn't want to think about him, because if I did, I just thought, he's a person of no integrity. He should have saved himself. He just left his disciples, he left us. It was a disaster. We never recuperated. And then I learned to forgive him. And when I forgave him, all the negativity was gone. And then I saw him at Rathyatra Festival maybe 5-6 years ago. So it was like, you know, 96, 2000, like 25 years later, or 23 years later, I saw him. And when I saw him, there was only love and affection. It was the relationship we had. It was only positive, because the forgiveness removed all the negative. It's amazing how it works. So Prabhupada said, because we have to tolerate happiness and distress, therefore the first quality of a devotee is forgiveness, because forgiveness is tolerance. And when you're forgiving, then you're sama, then you're equal. Isn't that interesting? That Prabhupada's saying forgiveness is what makes you equal. You're always forgiving. You're always, and sometimes he interchanges it with tolerance. You're always forgiving. Nobody can hurt you. Has anyone ever said something to you and said, Prabhu, that was offensive? I never heard this word offensive before I came to ISKCON. Have you? It's like, everything's offensive now, isn't it? Everybody's offensive, everything's offensive, you touched that, this is offensive, you said that, you walked on this shadow, that's offensive. You walked left instead of right, that's offensive. But specifically, you know, I'm being offended, that's offensive. You know, you served him, he's a junior, you should have served me, you're offensive. You know. So, you know, this is what you get by cultivating bhakti, you feel that people are offending you, that's not Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada's saying, you come to this level of forgiveness, then you transcend duality. Anyway, there's a happy ending to this story. It's so amazing. So I see this devotee after 23 years. And I'm thinking, you know, I was thinking, you really let me down. You really let me down. You left. You just left us high and dry, and the whole temple crumbled. You really left. That's what I was thinking. But I had got over it. I had forgiven him. And as soon as I saw him, he put his head down. He was so embarrassed. And he said, no. He didn't put his head down. His eyes were down. And I was very happy to see him because I had no ill feelings anymore. And his eyes were looking down, and he said two things. Number one, I'm sorry. Number two, I know I let you down. Please forgive me. And he just put his head down. It's like, wow. Amazing. For 18 years, I was holding on to resentment for of what he did the day he did it. Is that amazing? How stupid is that? Isn't it? So my realization from dealing with devotees who have issues, from helping people with forgiveness, is that we have to understand what are the qualities of a Vaishnava that Prabhupada wants us to develop. And it's not a question of liking and not liking, it's just a question of this pleases Krishna. This is what we're supposed to do. Prabhupada and Krishna will be happy if we act this way. And that's our motive to do it. Whether we feel like it or not. I don't feel like forgiving. It's not about feeling. It's about what is a Vaishnava, what he should do, how a Vaishnava acts. This is Vaishnava behavior. Not how you feel, but what is right. Integrity with what we value, not what we feel. Is that okay? Should we end? Pancha Goda said we can keep going. If you want to leave, it's fine. You know, I don't... What? And everyone will say, yeah, that was a good class, but he went too long. Yeah, the but. Always the buts. Yeah, someone had a question. No, yes, just... If you leave now, you won't offend me. Because I'm supposed to be the forgiveness guru. So if I can't forgive you, you know, we're looking pretty bad here. So if you want to leave, please leave. Yeah. Somebody has a question somewhere. Yes.
Hare Krishna.
Yes.
Thank you so much. Prabhuji, you mentioned about another piece.
Yes.
I was just wondering, Amani Namana Deva.
Yes.
You offer our respect to everyone.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
How is this connected with being samasukha, tolerant and happy?
Oh, very nice.
Is there a connection? And if yes, then what is
it? If you can elevate your consciousness to the state where you can respect everyone, yes, you're transcendental. Definitely. Definitely. But trying to respect everyone, trying to serve, trying to appreciate, even if you don't, but just trying it, it's so elevating. Because it's the consciousness of the elevated soul, so even trying to imitate it, it elevates you. See, the thing is, what Prabhupada is saying in this story of Chittaketu, he says, Taka Haridas, what was he doing? He was chanting Hare Krishna. He was blissful even though they were trying to kill him. Wow, amazing. Like, you're being caned and Hare Krishna, this is so sweet, Krishna, Krishna, so much nectar, I wish I had thousands of tongues, Krishna, Krishna. No, they're trying to kill you. Yeah, whatever, Krishna, Krishna, Hare, this is nectar, this is so sweet. The sweetness of Krishna consciousness is so great that the distresses of this world, they don't bother you. You're not even really conscious of them. That's the ultimate point. So when you're appreciating someone, the feeling of appreciating, of respecting a Vaishnava it's so sweet to appreciate that sweetness, it just puts you into a different world, where the distresses of this world and the happinesses of this world pale in comparison to the nectar of being able to appreciate a devotee. Because appreciation is an emotion, you feel it. If you're actually appreciating, you feel. And so, I just appreciate that you exist. So it's also, what I would say is that appreciation is also a sadhana. And if you appreciate as a sadhana, that will elevate you tremendously to the point of... That was actually my vow. I can't say... You're not supposed to say your vows, but something around this of appreciating devotees. And it's such an elevating sadhana to always just be happy to see devotees. I mean, I was thinking yesterday... I was looking at all the devotees. I was walking around looking at all the devotees and I was thinking, if Prabhupada didn't come to America, what would we all be doing right now? We'd all probably be in the mental hospital or some... We'd have, and Radha Kund doing who knows what. So every one of us is just a sample of Prabhupada's mercy. So just to see a devotee is to appreciate Prabhupada and his mercy, isn't it? And that somebody's trying... I mean, everybody... How could you not appreciate the devotees? Why are they here? Not to make money. Not to go to the movies. They're here to do tapasya. They're going out on parikrama every day, walking barefoot. How could you not appreciate? There's so much opportunity. Will not appreciate. So if you just get your mind in the right consciousness so it can appreciate, yes, you'll be so happy... you'll be tolerant. You'll tolerate everything else more easily. That's for sure. The more bliss you get, the more tolerant you'll be. Isn't it? Yes. That's Prabhupada's the solution. You're so absorbed in Krishna. Here's the point. You said something. You hurt me. Now, do I want to become absorbed in how much I hate you for saying that? Or do I want to become absorbed in the nectar of Damodar Leela? That's my choice. Because if I become absorbed in hating you, it's very hard to think of Krishna. That's Prabhupada's point, isn't it? So you want to get yourself in distress about this and that, then you forget Krishna. Yeah, then you can chant your rounds thinking of that person instead of Krishna. You can tell everybody, instead of telling everybody about Krishna, you can tell them how much you don't like that person. Isn't it? That's Maya. That's how Maya uses us. So, if you just appreciate the person, then you transcend the distress of having to feel what he did. Oh, he's having a bad day, whatever. He's a sincere devotee, he's trying. I appreciate he's trying, even though he hurts me. That's it. And then when you appreciate that devotee, it nullifies the negativity, and you can be happy. And your appreciation will affect him in a positive way. And it'll affect you positively. Because ultimately, we punish ourselves. by being negative. We're the real losers. We're expert at punishing ourselves. Yes? Okay. We stop now? Yeah, okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Go Premanandi. Hari Hari Bol.